Confucius, a great Chinese teacher and philosopher, was born in 551 BCE in Lu State, which is now known as Chufu, Shandong, China. During his lifetime, Confucius travelled across many states of the Chinese kingdom and expounded on what would later become the basic tenets of Confucianism, namely mercy, righteousness, courtesy, wisdom, and faith. The influence of Confucius during his time came through his living example of virtue and his philosophy of compassionate governance. Considered as the basis of Chinese culture, Confucius' teachings appealed to many Chinese philosophers after his passing. The most famous Confucian thinker was Mencius, who was regarded to be the true transmitter of Confucius' teachings, and was influential in the development of Confucianism up until the modern times. We now present excerpts of the sage wisdom of Confucius through the teachings of Mencius, known as the Works of Mencius, or Mengzi.
Chou said, "Comparing Bo Yi and Yi Yin with Confucius, are they to be placed in the same rank?"
Mencius replied, "No, since there were living men until now, there never was another Confucius."
Chou said, "Then did they have any points of agreement with him?" The reply was, "Yes, if they had been sovereigns over 100 li of territory, they would all of them have brought all the princes to attend in their court and have obtained the throne. And none of them, in order to obtain the throne, would have committed one act of unrighteousness or put to death one innocent person. In those things, they agreed with him."
Zhao said, "I venture to ask wherein he differed from them."
Mencius replied, "Dai Bo, Zi Gong, and Yao Ruo had wisdom sufficient to know the sage. Even had they been ranking themselves low, they would not have demeaned themselves to flatter their favourite. Now Dai Wu said, according to my view of our master, he was far superior to Yao and Shun. Zi Gong said, by viewing the ceremonial ordinances of a prince, we know the character of his government. By hearing his music, we know the character of his virtue. After the lapse of 100 ages, I can arrange according to their merits the kings of 100 ages. Not one of them can escape me. From the birth of mankind till now, there has never been another like our master." Yao Ruo said, "Is it only among men that it is so? There is the Qi Lin among quadrupeds, the Feng Huan among birds, the Tai Mountain among mountain anthills, and rivers and seas among rain pools. Though different in degree, they are the same in kind. So the sages among mankind are also the same in kind, but they stand out from their fellows and rise above the level, and from the birth of mankind till now, there never has been one so complete as Confucius."
Mencius said, "He who, using force, makes a pretense to benevolence is the leader of the princes. A leader of the princes requires a large kingdom. He who, using virtue, practices benevolence, is the sovereign of the kingdom. To become the sovereign of the kingdom, a prince need not wait for a large kingdom. Tang did it with only 70 li, and King Wen with only 100. When one by force subdues men, they do not submit to him in heart. They submit because their strength is not adequate to resist. When one subdues men by virtue, in their heart's core they are pleased and sincerely submit, as was the case with the 70 disciples in their submission to Confucius. What is said in the Book of Poetry, from the west, from the east, from the south, from the north, there was not one who thought of refusing submission, is an illustration of this."
Mencius said, "Benevolence brings glory to a prince, and the opposite of it brings disgrace. For the princes of the present day, to hate disgrace and yet to live complacently doing what is not benevolent is like hating moisture and yet living in a low situation. If a prince hates disgrace, the best course for him to pursue is to esteem virtue and honor virtuous scholars, giving the worthiest among them places of dignity and the able officers of trust. When throughout his kingdom there is leisure and rest from external troubles, let him, taking advantage of such a season, clearly digest the principles of his government with its legal sanctions, and then even great kingdoms will be constrained to stand in awe of him.
It is said in the book of poetry, "Before the heavens were dark with rain, I gathered the bark from the roots of the mulberry trees and wove it closely to form the window and door of my nest. Now, I thought, ye people below, perhaps ye will not dare to insult me." Confucius said, "Did not he who made this ode understand the way of governing? If a prince is able rightly to govern his kingdom, who will dare to insult him? But now the princes take advantage of the time when throughout their kingdoms there is leisure and rest from external troubles, to abandon themselves to pleasure and indolent indifference. They, in fact, seek for calamities for themselves. Calamity and happiness in all cases are men's own seeking. This is illustrated by what is said in the book of poetry, "Be always studious to be in harmony with the ordinances of God, so you will certainly get for yourself much happiness." And by the passage of the Taijia, "When heaven sends down calamities, it is still possible to escape from them. When we occasion the calamities ourselves, it is not possible any longer to live."
Mencius said, "If a ruler give honor to men of talent and virtue, and employ the able so that offices shall all be filled by individuals of distinction and mark, then all the scholars of the kingdom will be pleased and wish to stand in his court. If, in the marketplace of his capital, he levy a ground rent on the shops but do not tax the goods or enforce the proper regulations with that levying a ground rent, then all the traders of the kingdom will be pleased and wish to store their goods in his marketplace.
If at his frontier passes there be an inspection of persons, but no taxes charged on goods or other articles, then all the travellers of the kingdom will be pleased, and wish to make their tours on his roads. If he require that the husbandmen give their mutual aid to cultivate the public field, and exact no other taxes from them, then all the husbandmen of the kingdom will be pleased, and wish to plough in his fields. If from the occupiers of the shops in his marketplace he does not exact the fine of the individual idler or of the hamlet's quota of cloth, then all the people of the kingdom will be pleased and wish to come and be his people."
If a ruler can truly practice these five things, then the people in the neighboring kingdoms will look up to him as a parent. From the first birth of mankind till now, never has anyone led children to attack their parent and succeeded in his design. Thus, such a ruler will not have an enemy in all the kingdom, and he who has no enemy in the kingdom is the minister of heaven. Never has there been a ruler in such a case who did not attain to the royal dignity.
Mencius said, "All men have a mind which cannot bear to see the sufferings of others. The ancient kings had this commiserating mind, and they, as a matter of course, had likewise a commiserating government. When with a commiserating mind was practiced a commiserating government, to rule the kingdom was as easy a matter as to make anything go round in the palm. When I say that all men have a mind which cannot bear to see the sufferings of others, my meaning may be illustrated thus. Even nowadays, if men suddenly see a child about to fall into a well, they will without exception experience a feeling of alarm and distress. They will feel so not as a ground on which they may gain the favor of the child's parents, nor as a ground on which they may seek the praise of their neighbors and friends, nor from a dislike of the reputation of having been unmoved by such a thing."
From this case, we may perceive that the feeling of commiseration is essential to man, that the feeling of shame and dislike is essential to man, but the feeling of modesty and complacence is essential to man, and that the feeling of approving and disapproving is essential to man. The feeling of commiseration is the principle of benevolence. The feeling of shame and dislike is the principle of righteousness. The feeling of modesty and complacence is the principle of propriety. The feeling of approving and disapproving is the principle of knowledge. Men have these four principles just as they have their four limbs. When men, having these four principles, yet say of themselves that they having these four principles, yet say of themselves that they cannot develop them, they play the thief with themselves. And he who says of his prince that he cannot develop them, plays the thief with his prince. Since all men have these four principles in themselves, let them know to give them all their development and completion, and the issue will be like that of fire which has begun to burn, or that of a spring which has begun to find vent. Let them have their complete development, and they will suffice to love and protect all within the four seas. Let them be denied that development, and they will not suffice for a man to serve his parents with.
Mencius said, "Is the arrow maker less benevolent than the maker of armor of defense? And yet, the arrow maker's only fear is lest men should not be hurt, and the armor maker's only fear is lest men should be hurt. So it is with the priest and the coffin maker. The choice of a profession, therefore, is a thing in which great caution is required." Confucius said, "It is virtuous manners which constitute the excellence of a neighborhood. If a man, in selecting a residence, does not fix on one where such prevail, how can he be wise?" Now, benevolence is the most honorable dignity conferred by heaven, and the quiet home in which man should as well. Since no one can hinder us from being so, if yet we are not benevolent, this is being not wise. From the want of benevolence and the want of wisdom will ensue the entire absence of propriety and righteousness. He who is in such a case must be the servant of other men.
Mencius said, "When anyone told Zi Lu that he had a fault, he rejoiced. When Yu heard good words, he bowed to the speaker. The great Shun had a still greater delight in what was good. He regarded virtue as the common property of himself and others, giving up his own way to follow that of others, and delighting to learn from others to practice what was good. From the time when he ploughed and sowed, exercised the potter's art, to the time when he became emperor, he was continually learning from others. To take example from others to practice virtue is to help them in the same practice. Therefore, there is no attribute of the superior man greater than his helping men to practice virtue."
Mencius said, "Bo Yi would not serve a prince whom he did not approve, nor associate with a friend whom he did not esteem. He would not stand in a bad prince's court, nor speak with a bad man. To stand in a bad prince's court or to speak with a bad man would have been to him the same as to sit with his court robes and court cap amid mire and ashes. Pursuing the examination of his dislike to what was evil, we find that he thought it necessary, if he happened to be standing with a villager whose cap was not rightly adjusted, to leave him with a high air, as if he were going to be defiled. Therefore, although some of the princes made application to him with very proper messages, he would not receive their gifts. He would not receive their gifts, counting it inconsistent with his purity to go to them."
Hui of Liu Xiao was not ashamed to serve an impure prince, nor did he think it low to be an inferior office. When advanced to employment, he did not conceal his virtue, but made it a point to carry out his principles. When neglected and left without office, he did not murmur. When straitened by poverty, he did not grieve. Accordingly, he had the saying, "You are you, and I am I." Therefore, self-possessed, he companied with men indifferently, at the same time not losing himself. When he wished to leave, if pressed to remain in office, he would remain. He would remain in office. when pressed to do so, not counting it required by his purity to go away. Mencius said, Bo Yi was narrow-minded, and Hui of Liu Xia was wanting in self-respect. The superior man will not manifest either narrow-mindedness or the want of self-respect.
Gentle viewers, thank you for your kind company for today's episode of Between Master and Disciples. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television for Planet Earth, Our Loving Home, up next after Noteworthy News. Wishing you many blessings from heaven.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/BMD.